Welcome to the Ancestral Mind Podcast. My name is Colin Stucker, founder and CEO of Wild Foods Co. and ancestralmind.com. We are here to cover all things from an ancestral health perspective. We want to help you build the ancestral mind so you can think about the decisions you make on a daily basis while considering the first principles of what makes you a sexy human beast. Brent?
Wow, you took a little bit too long to kind of go to me there. I'm a little offended.
I was keeping you on your toes.
You know what? You got to be careful who you offend and how you offend them these days. So don't offend me. I'll sue you.
The more people you offend, the more character you develop. That's my motto. We are here to
have a lot of character.
Wake people up to the mismatch of our current environment so we can hopefully reverse the trend of our declining health currently overtaking our species as we evolve into the next epoch of human evolution. My name is Colin Stuckert. I moved to Austin 4 years ago to start Wild Foods Co. as a past life as a CrossFit gym owner and juice bar owner. I've been a small business entrepreneur for the past about 12 or 13 years. In fact, now that I am saying that, and I'm not even close to where I want to be, I just realized that's 12 to 13 years of pain and struggle and not as much upside as you'd think, but I'm working on it. And so anyone that is considering working for yourself, well, maybe just shoot me an email. I'll advise you against it.
Or at least advise you against opening a franchise.
The CrossFit Gym was, I mean, an affiliate and you had a lot of leeway in that. Yeah.
I was talking about Energize.
Yeah. Well, that's not what we're talking about today, though. Today, we're going to talk about relationships. We're going to talk about Sex 3.0, which is
wow. A
fascinating book. It's a theory where it's even kind of a movement. It's something that I was introduced to a few years ago that I haven't seen really any progress on. Like, I don't think, you know, the author and the people behind the movement are really doing it justice, because I really feel like this theory, or at least some version found inside this theory, is kind of the best way to explain where we are at today in our current relationships and where we could make changes to just live better in our modern world of marriage and divorce and monogamy and all this nonsense. And now even with Tinder and cheating and all the things that come with our modern technology driven world. So we're going to get into that. Brent hasn't read the book. I've read the book a couple years ago, but we're going to go on the Wikipedia page and, well, I guess it's actually their website, sex3.0.org. And they have a really good...
That's the worst website ever.
I know, right? They have a really good breakdown of the book and some of the points. So we're going to just kind of go by this point by point. I'm going to share some of my ideas and thoughts about this, because I've been thinking about this topic for a few years. Another really good book to read on this topic is Sex at Dawn. And Brent is going to just act as the beginner layperson, as he is on every show pretty much.
Yep.
And ask questions and hopefully not interrupt me too much.
Well, the interruptions are going to come. I'll get yelled at for the interruptions. I think we even pulled one of those, you yelling at me, as an audio clip for one of the last episodes. But
it's good marketing.
Yeah, it is. It is good. But I didn't even get a title on this episode, so I was looking forward to a new one. I guess every man, layman will work, and I will ask as many questions as I can.
Producer.
I've had a lot of sex, though. So, you know, I think I'm not as beginner as you might think.
This topic isn't really about sex, but that's what we're going to kind of
explore. It's called sex. Okay. All right.
It's Sex 3.0.
I'll find out how it's not really about sex.
It's good marketing either way. Mm-hmm. So what are some other things before we hop into the content, Brent? Like, you haven't really introduced yourself, so why don't you go for that? And guys, I'm coming off a cold, not feeling too great, but because we want to get this content out to you and stay consistent, and because like in our first show or maybe the second show, we talked about how we can't talk about doing things. We have to just do things. Therefore, just we're doing them today, even though I should probably be sleeping.
Yeah. And you can tell Colin's a little bit cranky, so that might come out in the episode a little bit. That's okay. It's okay. If he yells at you, don't think about that too hard, or me. Just remember, I'm Brent Philbin. I'm kind of producing, co-hosting, whatever you want to call me. And my credentials aren't nearly as long or as applicable as Colin's. I played poker and I used Tinder a lot. So I don't anymore, but I did back in the day.
You have probably more Tinder experience than I do.
Yeah, I have. Yes. I had a whole Tinder formula, Colin. Like, I had a real specific way.
Addicts. Like, I remember when you visited me in Texas the first time, and anytime we were driving somewhere, you're all swiping left or right. And I'm just like, what the fuck are you guys doing? This is like, it's just another form of our sickness.
How'd that work out for me, Colin? We went to a movie and I went on a date 2 hours before we went to that movie. And
I don't remember.
I was making out with a girl at the bar when you guys showed up. So I don't know. Tinder was working out really well for me at the time. I was only in town for 2 days.
Well, I guess that's going to lead into the topic for today, which is basically about how our modern idea of relationships and monogamy is flawed. Now, on the Ancestral Mind, we love unpacking things like this. We love taking the dogmas of our modern world and saying, this is wrong because of this. This is how we are designed. This is how we evolved. This is how our ancestors live, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And marriage is an invention that they actually date back to about, let's see, I got an article here. 2350 BC is the first known date of marriage ceremony in Mesopotamia, which is one of the first civilizations that we have on record. And this, we'll get into how that happened, but a lot of what marriage was created for and after was a result of personal property and the ideas of that. Then there's some issue, things like that came along with that, like paternity concern, where men couldn't know whose children were his. And when you had the idea of property, you had to pass property along. So it became very important for men to know who their children were. And that is like kind of fundamentally the basic reason why marriage became such a thing. And then obviously for religious, as you get into, you know, the, I guess, when was the Holy Wars? Like the 1300s,
the Crusades?
Crusades, you know, when religion was a big thing, the Catholic Church used marriage and the ideas around it as just another form of control, right? And so even today in our modern world, our ideas of marriage are basically propped up by myths we tell each other, but also by probably billion-dollar industries at this point.
Yeah.
Like the divorce and getting married industries, you know how much money is around those things? Like, it's insane.
Well, we got to create jobs somewhere, Colin, and really high-paid wedding planners and all that is, I guess, part of the system. It blows my mind how much people will spend on a wedding.
It's just another form of like external validation. They spend it for other people. They also spend it because they think more is going to make them happy, or some big glam wedding is going to do this or whatever. Like, and obviously that's a whole nother topic for another day. We can maybe unpack it a little bit. Let's just go over the Sex 3.0 wiki. Okay. We're going to follow this and kind of read and take turns going back and forth. Why don't you start with the beginning, the 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0 framework with the different eras of mankind and the way we define sex. Why don't you start with that? You see that? Oh no, he doesn't, because he's the worst ill-prepared producer podcaster of all time.
Hold on. It's
hold on, sex guys.
3.0.org. I mean, first of all,
the link is in the show notes.
Oh, was it?
It's okay. It's under the Wild Foods ad, which we haven't done yet. You need to get that in there.
All right. While I'm pulling this up, Colin, do you know who the sponsor of this episode is?
I could guess.
You would probably be right. And the sponsor of this episode is Wild Foods. We have real foods, real ingredients, and we deliver it to you in real time. So if you're interested, go to wildfoods.co, where you can get 12% off just for being a listener of this podcast. Use the code AMPODCAST12 to get 12% off that order. Tell them Brent sent you and that you like my voice.
It's pretty good. That was one of your better ones. I will add to that disclaimer for the show that none of these opinions on the Ancestral Mind are, what is it? Usually we say they're not approved or
they're not representative of Wild Foods.
Wild Foods, yeah. Like,
yeah. These are your own personal opinions.
They're separate. And also on this show, guys, this is shame-free zone. We want to explore topics. We want to challenge the status quo. If something here offends you, then honestly, and I don't mean to be a jerk by saying this, you should take that as a sign that you probably need to open your mind a little bit. You need to grow. Take things that challenge you as a chance to level up and expand your awareness and become a more enlightened person. Even if you decide to monogamy is the thing, then at least you understand the pros and cons, you understand the origins, and then you can decide for yourself, right? And that's kind of what today's show is going to be all about. We're going to challenge some very fixed dogmas and things that have been around for a long time. I mean, literally since the invention of agriculture and cities and since we've been settling down, marriage is something that has, again, it's a man-made creation. It's not natural to our species. And there's a lot of things to it. So we're going to cover that in the show, but keep that in mind. We're not here telling you marriage is bad or monogamy is bad, but we will tell you, and I will tell you, and I will firmly posit that marriage is unnatural to our species, at least long-term monogamy that is based on sexual exclusion. And again, we're going to get into that a little bit. So did you finally get to the wiki, Brad?
I'm here. I'm on the Wikipedia page. I'm ready to go. I'm ready.
Please read the first few lines.
So you just want me reading off like the actual sex 3.0 bullet points, or you're talking about going down here to 1.0?
No, literally, I literally want to read this entire page in some way.
The bullet points part?
No, start at the absolute beginning. Go down to the bullet points.
All right.
I'm gonna highlight where you leave off or where I leave off, et cetera, and we'll just take turns on different things. And then okay. We're going to talk about them.
So I guess this page isn't that long. So yeah, we can say this stuff out loud. So this is under the heading of sex 3.0. Sex 3.0 is an operating framework for sexual relationships that replaces the conventional model that we were all raised to believe in, but which is currently undergoing a cascading failure. There's multiple eras here. We've got 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0. 1.0 is all of human history up until 8,000 BC. 2.0 is that 8,000 BC until the modern day. And 3.0 is from this moment and day forward. It's a pure form theory. The core message is that the modern era we're born into, Sex 2.0 provides us with a framework, and Sex 3.0 provides us with the better framework.
Well, you missed it. It provides us with a framework of relating to each other sexually that is toxic.
Yes.
And, you know, like, I enjoy your announcer voice, but let's also try to read the damn thing as it is.
Read the damn thing.
So let's talk about what is this is saying right now. So it's saying 1.0 is all of human history up to 8,000 BC. Do you also know what happened around that time, Brent?
No, I don't know specifically.
It's about 10,000 years ago. It's the thing that basically changed everything. You should know this. Your eight shows in the ancestral mind. This is like ancestral 101. The invention of a technology, of a thing that changed our way of life and thus human nature ever since then.
Agriculture. Okay, I was getting there.
Agriculture changed our way of life because before then, we were nomadic hunter-gatherers. As nomadic hunter-gatherers, and this is where it gets really fun, where we get into it, and I think it's coming up, yeah, in Sex 1.0.
Yeah, in 1.0. We're going to be... Yeah, I think you're about to summarize basically everything.
We're going to go into 1.0, but before we do that, I'm going to again do the brief overview so you can kind of paint a picture. So 1.0 is up until about 10,000 years ago when we moved from hunter gatherers and we became farmers. 2.0 is then until today where we basically lived as city dwellers. Humans lived as city dwellers, which was made possible by having food that we could grow in a fixed area. Until we were able to grow food and control food output, we could never have had cities, right? That's kind of goes hand in hand. And then Sex 3.0 is the goal of Sex 3.0 is to move us forward into the next epoch of human relationships by understanding where we came from and making a better decision, breaking free from the dogmas of religion and marriage and all these different things that have been so ingrained in our culture that are really a result of a lot of inventions and a lot of things that are rooted thousands of years ago that just don't serve us today.
Right.
And so that's the goal of Sex 3.0. And so that's why they call it a pure form theory. They're at the end of the wiki, they also talk about how it's like a grand theory of everything, which I do think in some form that the Sex 3.0 idea is one of those like all encompassing theories. We don't know all the different variables and we don't know how true or untrue. Most of them pretty much explain the fact that we have a 50-60% divorce rate. They explain why everybody cheats. It explains why we are all always attracted to the other sex, which we talked about in the show with Ebony, which is based on our evolutionary past. So
I feel like we messed up not having Ebony on this show, actually.
Well, we're going to do part B with her. So this is going to be Sex 3.0 part one, where we're going to cover a lot of these ideas because these are some bigger ideas. And if this is new to you, like I read this book after I had read Sex at Dawn. So some of these ideas I had already in my head, I've been thinking about them. I've challenged the status quo of monogamous relationships because I had been in some that had been stressful. And, you know, we've all been in relationships that have failed. Like almost everybody has, right? Why is that so constant? Why do most people in marriage make jokes about how like they're unhappy and they don't have sex? And like, why is that such a thing? It's like literally a part. And like there's a comic that's like anytime you make a joke, there's always a shred of truth involved or something like that. Like there's some comic that said that. This is a perfect example. Like people make jokes about relationships and sex and marriage and cheating and it's always under the guise of like a joke, but there's always truisms that are directing that joke.
There's a reason it's funny. Like when you say, I haven't had sex in weeks, and then you're like dying a little bit on the inside. Exactly. You're like, I haven't.
Right. So let's move into now Sex 1.0, which is very ancestrally appropriate because we're going to cover what humans did in regards to relationships and marriage when we were living in the wild. So we're going to go one paragraph at a time and take turns. All right, Sex 1.0, duration, all of human history up until 8,000 BC. Why don't you kick us off with the first paragraph, Brent?
All right, during the 1.0 era of humanity, neither animals nor edible fruit or vegetables were farmed. Human beings hunted animals and gathered the fruit and vegetables they could find. This is a tribal existence. A band of hunter-gatherers was typically less than 100 people and commonly consisted of between 30 to 50 people in size, including children. This is a very nomadic form of existence. Tribes were always moving to wherever there was food, water, and shelter. And during this era, human beings did not live in conventional towns or villages, like we said, and there were no such things as countries. The oldest countries in the world were approximately 6,000 years old. So,
okay,
it's so way before that.
Yeah. So this is, as we talk about on the show, where we try to go, we try to visualize, we try to spend a lot of time mentally to understand how did the human animal exist in its natural habitat. Now, Brent, what do you do if you're a zoologist or a biologist or and you're going to study an animal species? What do you think you would do?
You would observe them and where they live.
You would go to them, yes, right? Into their natural habitat, and you would go observe them, right? And so modern day anthropologists, which tend to study humans, will go and find the closest representation we can to wild humans, which is modern day hunter-gatherers. Now, there's not many of these left. Like, we actually just recently, I think a year ago, have pictures of a tribe somewhere in South America that we think has never been touched by man at all. They were actually trying to shoot arrows at the plane flying over. Like, there's pictures of that. And so if we could actually get in there and observe them, that would be a very close representation to how we probably lived in the wild.
There's another island where people decided to go visit it and they got murdered and they decided not to charge the indigenous tribes or anything like that because it's their fault. The people showed up there. They shouldn't have gone.
Yeah. So we're trying to, again, spend time to understand what it's like for humans in the wild. And this band of humans, less than 100 people, I would even venture to say it's, like it says here, between 30 to 50 people, including children. It's a small band. You could move around often in search of food. You would move with the seasons. You would even follow big game around. Like, you would basically migrate and follow a lot of the animals because the animals were your food. And when it was cold, you would try to move to warmer climates, et cetera. What's really interesting about this time and what we're going to talk about relating to marriage is how I think he gets into a little bit about, he talks about property. That might be under property concern. Let's see. Yeah.
So here, says they were egalitarian.
Yeah. So during this period, human beings had no concept of property. Not only did people not own anything, they had no concept of property. In the sense, human beings were the same as the millions of other known species on the planet who also have no concept of property. Also, in a nomadic band, anything that was owned would have been carried around by its owner, which would slow them down and actually decrease their chances of survival and not increase it. The concept of property was not only not necessary for our survival during this era, it would have been counterproductive. Now, let's just think about that and unpack that for a second. What they're saying is, if you're a hunter-gatherer and you move around and you, like, if you set up camp, you might, like, you know, set up a lean-to or build something of sticks or whatever and have fires. But for the most part, you would be able to leave and move somewhere else in very quickly, right? This was also before we, like, domesticated horses and we could be like a cowboy, right? We literally had to carry everything. And if we had children, we had to carry them too a lot of times, right? So the more things you had in this type of society, the more of a burden it would have been. When we could make maybe sharp tools or arrows or whatever, we would literally carry those around with us everywhere we went. And so you have to think about this idea of property and, like, just think about how we have property today. Like, imagine if everything you bought, you had to even just lug around in your car. Like, if everything you owned, you had to drive around, most people would have very little things.
Yeah, right? I actually do. I made a point in life to reduce everything I owned to what fit in a car. And, yeah, you know, I'm kind of going away from that now because I'm buying some furniture. But
I hate owning furniture. I only have it now because, like, we have a family.
Austin is the worst. As much as I loved moving here and some great things, there are no furnished places in the entire city. Everything that's furnished is an Airbnb, and none of the Airbnb people will rent it to you for anything reasonable.
That's probably the case in, like, every growing city, though. Like, whenever there's demand and it's expensive, like, those places go for like $4,000 to $5,000 a month. Right?
Most other places I've lived, I found a very, very reasonable furnished place. They didn't even exist here. So I had to settle and get some furniture, which
growing,
sucks.
Growing city. So this idea of property, and this is going to be very important for understanding a lot of things about our modern day life, about marriage, etc. But I want you to just visualize what it would be like if you had everywhere you went and you moved a lot. You know, you'd walk 13 to 14 miles a day on average in search of food when you were maybe migrating to different areas to find different base camps and things like that with your group. Everything would be on your back. Maybe you'd have an animal sling, and, you know, maybe we would have slings where you carry some water here and there, but, like, you would have to carry food. You would have to carry your weapons. Anything that you had would come with you. It kind of changes your idea of property and what you'd want to own when you start thinking about that.
Yep.
So The next paragraph we got here is hunter-gatherer tribes were typically egalitarian and shared everything. So Brent, do you understand the word egalitarian? What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, again, you were talking about their lack of property ideas. And when you talk about egalitarian societies, you talk about things like socialism in a vacuum or communism in a vacuum. This is the idea that although they're state property, they're still very similar. And egalitarian also is very philanthropic. Like if you're totally happy with giving up what you have extra of to the people who have less of, which is not something that we have in like a capitalist society.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the basic idea without getting into the idea of like states and countries and things like that is it's kind of the best analogy today is your immediate family. If your immediate family was in the woods and you had mom, dad, couple brothers, sisters, whatever, nobody in that group would starve if there was food, right? Nobody would be hoarding resources and not sharing.
Right.
And everyone gets that because it's your family. That's exactly how it was for our ancestors living as nomadic hunter-gatherers. It is the default state of the human animal. And so I want you guys to keep that in mind. We didn't hoard resources. We didn't even have the idea that an individual could own something. Like everything was shared. Everything was egalitarian. And this is a very big part of our evolution, our survival, because the number one evolutionary niche that we carved out in the wild was what, Brent?
Was the ability to work together in groups.
Group survival, okay. So moving on. After gathering hunting food, everybody ate regardless of their ability to hunt or gather. Basic tools were shared, as were child rearing responsibilities. And that's another very important thing to consider. Back then, you know, we didn't think in terms of, we would know that a mother could be the mother of a child because that child would come out of the mother's body, right?
Yeah.
But for a father, nobody knew who was the actual father. So what you see is like the men ended up being like all de facto parents/uncles where everybody kind of cared for everybody, right? And it also, every time I hear the statement, it takes a village to raise a child, I think like, yeah, it does, because that is the most evolutionary appropriate. Yet today we literally try to raise kids with like a single mom at home or a single dad and a right. mom or whatever. And like, it's so backwards, it's absurd. So moving on. Broadly speaking, this is how we live for almost all of human history until the agricultural revolution, which began around 8,000 BC. That is what in the confines of sex 3.0 is what he's defining as sex 1.0. He's defining it as our most natural state of sex and how we would have had sex and how we wouldn't have had the idea of property, which also extended to partners. So there wasn't this idea of marriage or you're my husband or you're my wife and I own you and you can't sleep with other people or whatever, right? We don't actually know when those ideas actually started. There could have been ideas like that. Like there are some pair bonding things that are native to our species that we tend to do. Like there is an example of humans, and maybe you've noticed this personally, but it's like, it seems to be like 3 to 4 years is the amount of time where you can kind of be in honeymoon stage with somebody, stay attracted to them, committed to them, and then kind of like, you know, fall out of love or whatever, for lack of a better word. And if you think about how long it takes to kind of get a child to a safe age, you know, between pregnancy and child rearing and having it grow up through the most dangerous times as an infant, it would make sense that that would be the case, right? So whether or not that is an exact reason why we would be a little bit more monogamous or not, like that's still very uncertain. I think when you really understand these ideas, that that is just kind of one of those convenient, what's the word?
Like coincidences?
Yeah, it's kind of a coincidence, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you read the natural plane, Brent?
Well, according to sex 3.0 theory, during the 1.0 era, human sexuality operated on one dimension defined by the word natural, and the word natural simply meaning an agreement with nature. So human beings simply embraced their sexual nature and followed it. Again, in this sense, they were exactly like the millions of other known species on the planet who also simply followed their reproductive nature.
I really want to unpack this because I mean, this is one of those examples of, and I think about this when it comes to nutrition, I think when it comes to just like exercise, everything that pertains to the human being, how we move, how we talk, how we think, how we interact, how we have sex. Like when we just think of ourselves as an animal and we would study ourselves as any zoologist or biologist would study any species, it seems like it's pretty easy to make some 1+1=2 statements, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example. Like what does every other wild animal in nature do? Like when it comes to sex, like aside from various...
Other than the one time the monkeys engaged in prostitution, they mostly just have sex with whatever they want.
Yeah. And obviously every species has different ways of doing that. Like some females eat their male after sex, things like that. Like there's a lot of different variables, but for the most part, sex isn't something that has all these things like marriage and property and religion and all these things around it, the way humans have basically done, we've created these things for ourselves. We've created these restrictions and these rules and these unwritten laws because, again, marriage is a man-made invention. And in fact, even further down, monogamy is a man-made invention. And so what he's suggesting in the sex 1.0 paradigm is that if a man and a woman in a nomadic hunter-gatherer tribe were sexually attracted to each other, they would probably just have sex and that would be all there is to it. And then the next day, if that same man or that same woman were to have the same feelings with somebody else and it happened, or it would, like, they were next to each other and they were attracted or whatever, they would probably have sex. And then on and on and on every day, etc. Do you see any issue with that illustration of what it was probably like?
No, I mean,
doesn't it make sense that that's probably
perfect sense
how it was?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we can get into sex 2.0. So that's kind of the sex 1.0. We were nomadic hunter-gatherers. Let's just review real quick. We were nomadic hunter-gatherers. We didn't have a concept of property. We didn't have institutions like marriage and monogamy and these things of like, I own you, you don't sleep around, et cetera, right? Men, all the men in the tribe were pretty much like fathers and uncles or whatever, and all took a part in caring for children, right? Because again, group survival. It's also why our species, I think about this a lot, is like when you see a cute puppy, why does almost universally every human look at that thing and be like, ooh, that's cute, and want to like protect it? Because that is built into our DNA to feel that way towards babies.
Oh, okay. I guess right? That makes sense.
Because no, like if guys that had no vested interest, you'd think in a baby, because like you don't know that that's your son, right? Or your daughter, yet you still look at it and feel like an urge to like protect it and be like, oh, you're so cute, et cetera. Like having a drawn an attachment to that. I mean, that's how it was. Like, because men never knew who their children were. So yeah. We all have to feel that way.
And think about how many animals you think are cute until they get older.
Yeah, and then they're not cute anymore. And they're annoying dogs.
Yeah. Colin hates his dogs with a passion.
No, I don't hate them. They're just annoying. Okay. All right. So sex 2.0, why don't you kick us off?
Well, the shift to sex 2.0 started around 8,000 BC when the agricultural revolution began. Like we said earlier, humanity started to move away from the hunter-gatherer paradigm and started to become farmers, started to live a sedentary existence as opposed to nomadic. They stayed in one place and started to live in small villages and towns. As a byproduct of this change, for the very first time, we invented the notion of property. As the invention of the notion of property predates historical written records, it's hard to ascertain with 100% certainty what the first property in human existence was. But it's thought that the first property was land, specifically fertile land that was good for farming, and rocky and barren land would have no value since it wasn't useful for survival. And once that change occurred, it became crucially important for men to start to treat women as sexual property. The origins of this need are explained by the creation of paternity concern.
Okay, before we get into paternity concern, though, let's talk about what they're saying. So when we moved to become farmers, not only could we store things, especially things we would grow when you farm them, tend to store better than things like meat, for example, right? Like you could start growing wheat or grains or beans or legumes or things like that, and you could store them. So one, you'd have to protect your food, because that was always going to be something someone desired, right? And then actually where you grew that crops or whatever, or if you just think about a garden, like you usually have to fence it off because rabbits or
other animals
will come and eat it, right? So we would start investing in things like fences. We would start defending our food against other animals or people, right? Because there's always someone that's going to want our food. It's a resource. And that's kind of the base of the resource we would have had to protect. Then we would probably build permanent structures like villages and towns. And then we would create tools or weapons to be able to protect, again, other humans was probably the biggest threat, really, especially if you were in like a small village or town, like any humans that came through that wanted your stuff could just basically take your women and children and your food. Like that was always a constant threat. So The more we settled down, the more, I mean, think about it. Like think about the risk of the castle or the fortress. Like, yeah, you have to have big walls and a moat or whatever, but you're still in one place. You're still stationary,
right?
If you're a nomad, you can literally just walk away, run away. Like what are you having to defend? Like why, if you come into contact with another human tribe that seems dangerous, just go to a different direction, you know? But if you have a farm and land and resources and things that you've built and cultivated and you have investment, well, now you have something to protect. And the reason that this led into needing to treat women as sexual property is because of what they're talking about next, paternity concern. Now, what do you think that means, Brent?
I think we've already touched on this, but this is just like, who are my kids?
Exactly. Now, how do you think because I know this, maybe you don't know this, but why would you want to know who your kids are, and how could property make that an important thing you need to know?
My guess is the first semblance of any law and order would have been your property passes down to your lineage. And that was there before, you know, we're even talking about like Hammurabi or anything like that. So,
yeah, I mean, it's basically passing down property. Like that was literally the thing. And, you know, then eventually down the timeline, you see why there was such a big concern over the heirs for the king. Right?
Right.
Things like that. Like, and then lineage and all that stuff.
And that's why the queen has to be a virgin and all this stuff.
Yeah. The base for paternity concern was I have these resources. Either I've acquired weapons, grains, lands, farms, houses, whatever. And I need to know that I'm passing them down to my sons or daughters. Now, why would we be concerned with that? Like, it's kind of weird because it's not really how Mother Nature programmed us, but it makes sense when you understand like evolution and why genes want to procreate. Like
well, thought about that? You trust your, I feel like it was part of trust and that kind of thing. Like you trust your immediate family first. And as the tribes stopped moving and started being bigger, the parts that were becoming the pockets were the neighborhoods or the families or the tight knit pieces. So if you know that your child is of you and from you, so they're the most likely to continue to be in your corner and not try to steal from you or stab you in the back and stuff like that. So with property would have come theft.
Well, yeah, but why would a man care after he dies who has his stuff?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, I know I care. I hope that, you know, I give it to somebody that I like.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, it's one of those egotistical things that is kind of a secondary way that we've maintained reproduction in a weird way. Like, so we know that Mother Nature designed us to want to have sex a lot, right? So that we could increase the chances that we would have offspring that survive. But then once property was involved, now we have to make sure that those resources and the surviving we did and these things we built up, we have to make sure that they're going to perpetuate our lineage, our genes. So Mother Nature wants us to procreate, right? Okay, let's break it down even more to the molecular level. Why is that the case? What is the thing that has to go on and on and on and on?
The species?
Yeah, but they're those tiny things that actually do it.
Oh, is this the midichlorians?
It's your genes.
Oh.
I mean, midichlorians, isn't that from Star Wars or something?
Yeah.
It's retard. Okay. So genes are these things that live inside of us or like are us, and their entire goal is to keep surviving. And they use us as vessels. It's kind of pretty sneaky of them. They use us as vessels to keep them alive, keep them spreading, flourishing, etc. Just like any form of life, life tries to go on and grow and spread. It's pretty crazy when you think about it. Like, why is life like that? But it is. And so we are nothing but vessels for genes. Genes dictate why we want to have sex, why we want to have as many offspring as possible, why we would want to pass property down to our children, which is really crazy if you think about it, because like this gene doesn't have a brain, doesn't have a consciousness, but it still makes us want to acquire resources and give it to our heirs. Like it really is almost one of the like unexplained things of science, I feel like.
Right.
Like in nature, it makes sense. We want to procreate so we at least survive. But now that property is involved, we want to like give our children as many of the resources possible to increase the chances that our genes like spread even more, right? Because I get like more resources equals more opportunity for mating and for survival. Like it makes sense, but it's crazy how we kind of evolved into that, you know, and the invention of property and paternity concern was an accident. Like if we never settled down as farmers, obviously we'd never be here today. You and I, we wouldn't be on this podcast, but like this would never happen.
Yep.
So let's see, paternity concern. So go ahead and kick us off the creation of paternity concern.
Yeah, so we just unpacked some of this, but due to the self-evident nature of childbirth, women all throughout human history were always able to have sex with any number of men without having to worry that the child they're raising is somebody else's child. It came out of their body, so it's obviously their child, even though they may or may not have known who the father was. This never changes regardless of which period of human history the child is born, where geographically the child is born, its ethnicity, or the language of the culture it's born into. Men obviously don't have that luxury, which meant that men experienced paternity concern. The worry that they are raising a child that might not be theirs, or they might be passing their own property down to someone else's bloodline. And best ensuring the survival of somebody else's children and not their own. In Sex 1.0, this would not have been a significant issue with nobody having any concept of property to pass down to the children being raised collectively by the tribe anyway. But in Sex 2.0, where property became a key tool for the chances of survival for both you and your children and your children's children, establishing lines of heredity became of crucial importance for men. The combination of paternity concern when combined with the invention of property was the catalyst which moved human history from Sex 1.0 to Sex 2.0.
So he's basically saying that personal property screwed it all up.
Yeah.
Right.
Damn capitalists.
And it is pretty fascinating. Like, we just unpacked the genes a little bit and like why we want more property and passing it along down and all that. And so that makes sense. But I guess he hasn't really unpacked why women need to be treated as sexual property. Okay, so we're gonna get to that. That's the next one, is marriage. So I'll start on marriage. So the invention of marriage. A new system was required. A system of control needed to be invented to deal with this problem and to claim male paternity concern. A deal which allowed men to claim women as their sexual property. This system was called marriage. As the first marriages predate historical written record, they were most likely verbally bartered economic agreements between families that own land to allow them to merge resources and other land-owning families while best ensuring genetic lineage in determining paternity. As a side effect of this, related concepts like legitimacy and bastardy.
I have never seen that written that way before. Bastardy, I guess?
Bastardy?
Basically Jon Snow syndrome.
So if you're a bastard, but bastardy? Bastardy. Yeah, were invented. So, and it's crazy because like when you watch Game of Thrones or whatever, like those are always a huge deal.
Yeah, right? Marriage in Game of Thrones is very much like political and...
Well, that's... If you go to India, that's how they still are.
Yeah.
It's literally arranged marriage, right? So like, in fact, the United States and like Western culture, we basically invented the idea of marriage and love, which is a whole nother thing for like, obviously another topic for another day, right? Like, but marriage,
we're not talking about that without Ebony.
Yeah. That we'll do that in part two of the Sex 3.0 series. So what are they saying here though? Like, they invented marriage so that we could basically restrict women so that we can know who they had sex with. Why? Why would we want to restrict who women had sex with, Brent?
Well, it was the first method of control. Like, yes. There was no 23andMe. There was no,
it was the only, you know, Maury only Povich control.
Show. Like,
you could not test. It was the only way you could know.
So,
and did you know this in our modern world? In fact, we should try to Google the numbers. I think it's like 1 in 10 kids are a product of cuckolding.
That's cheating, basically.
Yes. It means 1 in 10 kids grow up with what they think is their biological father, and it's not.
Dang.
It's pretty crazy. Like, it might even be higher than 1 in 10. It might be like 1 in 8 or 6 or something.
Lucky for me, I look exactly like my dad.
Yeah, that's some crazy stuff actually, but we'll maybe say that for another day as well. So have we unpacked this yet? Can we move on for marriage?
I want to talk about virginity.
Well, that's the next thing. And that ties in, but again, let's just review, cause I feel like we didn't give it a good treatment.
Like, think about the solutions we come up with to even modern day problems. We're like, okay, we have a problem of carbon stuff. So what are we doing? We're making an electric car or whatever. Now, 100 years from now, it may sound stupid that we made an electric car instead of just, you know, teleporting or whatever the case, but the solution wasn't available. There was no paternity test. There was no way to figure out if that kid actually looked like you, or, you know, that kid that kind of looks like you was yours or not. So this is humans solving the problem in the best way that they could at the time. And I actually think it's pretty ingenious.
Just sucked for women though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That it definitely sucked for women.
This is the origin of the suppression of women's rights. I mean, this is where it started.
Yeah.
It literally started with marriage. And so it's kind of funny. Like, you see a lot of women that are like, oh, I got to be married, or I believe in marriage or whatever. And it's like, you realize that you're embracing the very thing that has suppressed your sex since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Right.
And it just so happened that men were more physically capable at the time overall as a group. So they kind of were the ones who had the power.
Right. And that, again, that's like, you know, a huge topic, which, you know, that deserves a historical treatment of how that happened. But this is really where it happened. Men basically decided, I have resources. I need to protect it. I'm going to use marriage to control my wife so that I know that the kids that she gives to me are my kids, right? Doesn't mean it's always the case, right? Which you see in like Game of Thrones, there's plenty of scandals around that type of stuff, right? Like, that's
no spoilers.
That's human nature, right? But that is the base reason why marriage was created, to control women so that men could know who their children were. That's something to understand. Now let's get into virginity prizing. Go for it.
Virginity prizing. That I have an idea what this is, but I haven't read it yet. As this agreement only best determined paternity, but did not guarantee it, a promise and a guarantee are not the same thing after all. And we're talking about marriage here. Many cultures embraced both the practices of prizing female virginity and also the practice of passing property and land rights to the firstborn, often the firstborn male, as it was thought the firstborn would be more the most likely to be the legitimate progeny of the husband in any brood, which is funny because that goes back to what you're saying, where the honeymoon period is like 3 years or whatever. They're saying the reason for the firstborn being more important than everyone else is because they're the most likely to actually the child. I had never thought about that reason for the firstborn mattering, because to me it's just like ingrained as a normal natural thing.
Well, and they're also saying that they were prizing virginity as almost a way to like market why you want to be a virgin.
Yeah.
Right. To women. Right. Like we want you to want to be a virgin because it increases the likelihood that when you lose your virginity, I will know that the kid that comes out is mine, that you don't have kids with anyone else or whatever. Right. In fact, that's weird. Like, why would they care if they had kids with anyone else? It's kind of an interesting thing. Wouldn't really matter.
I think it was kind more of like the hymen would be intact, so they would know.
Well, yeah, but why does
nobody else had done it and they're putting their seed in there? So from the day that the hymen is ruptured, that it's more likely that they could be
that, because that's sperm competition.
Yeah,
that's why. And that's a whole other thing, which is gets really in the weeds as far as reproduction and whatnot. We'll maybe talk about that another day, but let's just move on. So we've covered invention of marriage, paternity concern, et cetera. Now the introduction of the normal plane. When humanity went through the shift from 1.0 to 2.0, something notable happened and something notable did not happen. The notable thing that did not happen is the introduction of the second plane of human sexuality defined by the word normal. Humanity became a unique species at this point by becoming the first and only species to have two planes of sexuality, with the difference between the two planes being as follows. Normal is defined by society and not defined by nature. Natural is defined by nature and is not defined by society. Or in other words, the natural plane is a collection of biological imperatives given to us by nature, and normal is a collection of social imperatives given to us by society. Wow, that's some cool shit. What are they saying here?
Well, they're saying that there became a separation, and I feel like there still is, of what humans wanted to do and what they were naturally meant to do and what the societies that were developing were requiring them to do. Mm-hmm. So society is saying, no, you need to have sex with only your mate because that way you know who your kids are. Meanwhile, all of their natural urges are to have sex with everything that moves. And so that's where we start to see the separation.
Still alive today more than ever. I mean, people have so many flawed ideas about, you know, love and marriage and relationships and sex and monogamy that, you know, we have so much drama, pain and suffering in our world as a result. We also have big business around it, which is a whole other thing. So this is, you know, we have quite a bit more to go into. I'm thinking we want to maybe cover one or two more points and then save part two.
Save the real sex talk.
So that Ebony can join us.
For a sex expert.
So,
which I want to clarify, part two may not actually be the very next podcast we release because Ebony is in the Virgin Islands right now. So
yeah, these aren't going to always go in linear sequential order, but we'll always let you know if, you know, part A and part B and how to find them. Let's just cover the sex 2.0 schism and then kind of go from there.
We missed one sentence on that part, which I think was actually important. The notable thing that didn't happen during that thing was the introduction of the societal norm did not change human sexual nature. So that's a big thing.
Why does everyone cheat?
It's literally in their nature.
Why is there a 50% divorce rate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Our ideas of monogamy, our ideas of sex, our ideas of, you know, women shaming women for being sluts, guys being celebrated for being players, like all of the completely, what's the word when it's, you know, biased, dogmatic, just really effed up beliefs that we have around all these things are byproducts of our shitty system, are kind of influenced by our nature in some ways, mostly influenced by society and our ideas of what we think is right and wrong and what religion says and what our parents did and all this nonsense. Yeah. Like there is just so much crap here. And that's why I love going deep into topics like this, because this really when you can understand these ideas, even if you decide to be monogamous, you at least can understand why your mate is attracted to other people, why he or she looks at that person or flirts or is on social media looking at pictures of people or whatever. And so then you can maybe not respond so negatively. Like, why would you get mad at someone for being a guy, for being a man, or for being a woman, or for being a sexual being, right? Like, these are all things that are natural to our species. And so our goal with the ancestral mind is to put ideas like this in your head so you can better understand who you are, why you do things, why people around you do things, and then just live better life as a result. Like, you know, the more information you have, the better. So
live your best life, in fact.
Best life. Now, the schism, let's just do the schism. Let's do some final closing thoughts. And I mean, this is about as much as I can talk today. So we'll come back for part two and we'll have Ebony on as a guest. So Brent, take it away with Sex 2.0 schism.
All right, the Sex 2.0 schism. Under 2.0, the planes of human sexuality operate at the same time. And the schism is referring to that, the natural and normal not jiving. So the schism meant that you can now have something that is normal, but at the same time is not natural. For example, marriage. Marriage is totally normal according to society, but it is not natural. Human beings are not sexually exclusive by nature for life, whereas marriage says you need to be. The very reason that marriage was invented is precisely because human beings are not sexually exclusive by nature
for life. Now, this is the shit that I love.
This is shit.
This is when we get to it, right? The reason we have to have marriage, the reason we have to have this invention to prevent women from sleeping with other men is because women, men, all of us want to sleep with other people. Like, again, it's like, think about that for a second. That's the reason that we have this idea of monogamy, that, and we have this idea of marriage, to try to best control and limit people from being the sexual beings that they are. Now, obviously in a modern world, you don't want to have sex with everybody, because that's why we have all these STDs, and having 6 billion people on the planet, like, we run into problems if we're just aimlessly having Tinder sex all the time, right?
Yeah.
So there's definitely reasons why you don't want to just have sex with people. And obviously today, if you get pregnant, that's a huge financial thing. It's a huge life thing. So like, you know, in our modern world, there are reasons why you would want to not get pregnant at certain times. There's reasons why you wouldn't want to have sex with people all the time. So again, we're not recommending you do these things, but what we are recommending is you understand them. You should understand your biology. You should understand why your genes, which have a mind of their own, try to get you to do things that are a lot of times not in your best interest. Like when food's around, they try to get you to eat all the time, right? When hot people are around, they try to get you to have sex all the time, right? So these are all natural to our species. They're not necessarily normal. And we get into some of the reasons why that's a problem. Like when we proceed with this and this schism between natural and normal. But again, like, we need to understand these things and understand our origins so we can make better decisions and also just suffer less. People suffer from so much shame when they don't understand that the things that urge them are completely natural.
Yeah,
and that's what I want people to understand. Don't feel shame because you want to have sex with somebody. Like, understand it. You know, try not to act on it if you have reasons why you shouldn't act on it, but don't have shame around it.
Yeah, don't avert your eyes. Think about like the kids
who never say you're sorry.
Go like, through the church school and they're like, oh, don't gosh. You ever touch your wee wee or you're going to hell. Like,
yeah, in insane. Fact, I want to do a show on some of the fucked up things that we did and like some of the, I mean, really our show on dogma should have been all about like the nonsense, like how doctors used to not wash their hands, how doctors used to, we didn't even know what germs were. And so a lot of women, they would literally go and mess with cadavers in the morgue and then go deliver babies without washing their hands.
Yeah.
And like,
or how hard it was to get doctors to wash their hands, even when we found out how much
the guy that found out was silenced by everybody and fired basically. And it wasn't like 20 or 30 years later until Louis Pasteur, the pasteurization guy, finally like proved like, no, there's germs here. This is why we have to pasteurize, that they started washing their hands afterwards. Like, it was insane. Even though he did a test where he showed that if you wash hands, you cut the risk of, I forget the name of the disease. It's where women basically died. It was called like child bed death or something like that. But he was able to reduce it to like 10% and they still ignored him because they just didn't want to wash their freaking hands.
Yeah. Even it's modern insane. Day, it was there was a company that could get the doctors to wash their hands. They tried fining them. They tried everything. The only way they actually got them to do it is if they found you not washing your hands, your name got blasted out to the entire company. And finally, the shame was what made people do it.
Well, even in
the, disease dropped.
Even today in a lot of hospitals, there are campaigns to get professionals to wash their hands more.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them don't, or they forget. It's still a big deal. All right. This is a good place to wrap up part one of the 6.3.0. If you have any questions or comments on today's show, or if you want to get us to cover something or do something, anything, just send us an email to ancestralmind@gmail.com. You could tweet at Brent, I guess, right?
Yeah, you could tweet to Brent at D. You can leave us a voicemail. We have a voicemail set up in the show notes. You just pop in there. You leave us a voicemail. We'll play it on the show if you leave us one, probably.
And then in part two, we're going to have Ebony on, and we'll wrap up this idea of 6.3.0. And I hope this show gets you thinking. I hope this show helps you maybe better understand your urges, your biology, and hopefully eventually, because it's not going to be overnight, help you dispel some of the shame you may have around your sexuality or things you've done in the past. Maybe you've, you know, quote unquote, cheated on somebody. Like, I'm not suggesting that you should want to do these things, or you should hurt people, or you should lie. But if you can understand why your biology directs you to do things that a lot of times isn't in your best interest in our modern world, at least you can have a better relationship to those mistakes and hopefully be able to prevent them instead of being just a serial cheater or a serial liar or a serial, you know, denier person that's in denial.
Yeah. Or like a Instagram creeper.
Yeah. Or just a straight creeper. Okay, guys, thanks for listening, and make sure you like and subscribe. Do you like podcasts? I guess you can like them, or you just review them.
Reviews are the most important things for podcasts. Of course, you can like us. We will at some point have an actual podcast Twitter or Instagram or anything like that. Right now, it's just us. But
So follow me on Instagram at Colin Stuckert, and Brent doesn't have one, but you can get him on Twitter. And
Instagram is related to Facebook, so I try to avoid.
Okay. Yep. Well, thanks for watching, guys. Talk soon. Ba-da-ba. Octopus.
Colin's peeing. Like and subscribe, please.